Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The race to represent the 23rd Congressional District in Washington, D.C. has become a national story. The incumbent, Republican Tony Gonzalez, he dropped out of the race after his scandal, although he remains in Congress today. But that dropping out gave Brandon Herrera, the runoff opponent for the GOP nomination, gave him the green light. Now he is the nominee. Herrera is known as the AK guy, and his comments made in pro-gun videos that's making news. The Democrat in the race is Katie Padilla Stout. She is a political newcomer, and she is largely unknown to many voters right now, although they're probably going to get to know her over the course of the next few months. And Katie Padilla Stout joins us right now in the studio, and she's here to take your calls. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And I do want to acknowledge that Brandon Herrera was supposed to be on the air with us yesterday, but he canceled at the last minute. We have invited him back on. He has an open invitation to come on whenever he chooses to. And I look forward to having Brandon on the air and be able to take your calls, just like we have Katie with us today. So Katie Padilla Stout, tell us about yourself.
Hi, my name is Katie Padilla Stout. I'm a native of San Antonio, Texas, born and raised. I'm a mother of four and a current practicing attorney who mostly represents children in foster care. In addition, I'm a former public school teacher.
Where did you teach?
Here in Northside in San Antonio.
I mean, what grade and where?
Oh, sorry. Kindergarten at Colonies North Elementary for 3 years, and then at Myers Elementary off of Calabria and 410 for another 4 years, teaching second, fourth grade, and gifted and talented.
So you did it for a while. It wasn't just like 1 year kind of a deal, right?
Well, it's a little confusing because I taught for 3 years and I had the opportunity to teach mainly refugee students. And so I got involved in that process with immigration and other issues that were legal in nature. And so I decided to go to law school, went to law school, thought I would do either immigration law or special education law, both of which I had been exposed to as a kindergarten teacher. I worked at Disability Rights Texas, which is an organization that helps families for free if they have special education needs. Went on to work at the White House during law school, working in the Office of Civil Rights at the Department of Education. Thought I would maybe do policy. And at the end of the day, I just really missed working with kids. And after my husband and I got married, I decided I wanted to go back and teach for this amazing principal that I knew prior. And luckily, she had a space for me. And so I was able to go back and do what I loved.
So all of these things that you mentioned, working with children in schools, special need kids, refugee kids, immigration kids, do you think all those things, these areas that have touched your life, would that be informative to you if you become a congressperson?
Absolutely. I think our foremost responsibility is to our children and to our elders. And I believe in happy, healthy families and giving every family the opportunity to thrive.
So when did you decide that you were going to run for Congress? You had to run against three other individuals to get the Democratic nomination. And that may have seemed like that's a big thing. And you won, without a runoff. Santos Limón, he was the previous Democratic nominee 2 years ago. He was also in the race. And we would have thought, well, you know, name recognition alone may have made him the nominee. But you were able to overcome that and win. What did you do?
I think I do what I always do, which is get to know people, build on relationships. You know, having been a public school teacher for 7 years, so many previous families reached out to me and said, hey, we told our whole family. I've represented more than 1,000 children in foster care, probably, definitely upper high hundreds. And so a lot of people said, hey, you helped keep my grandson safe at a time when our family really needed that. Or you helped in this way during our custody case, and we've let everybody know that we fully support you. Also, having family and friends in South Texas and then building a really strong coalition in El Paso, we were hopeful that we would be able to avoid a runoff.
Looking at the Republican side of that, what did you see when you saw, okay, Tony Gonzalez is running for re-election? He won pretty easily 2 years ago against Santos Lumon in the general election. What was your assessment of that?
As far as Brandon Herrera versus Santos Lumon?
As far as like deciding, I need to get in this.
So everyone had kind of already been aware in September about the infamous scandal involving Tony Gonzalez. And so I was worried that he wasn't going to be able to be reelected. And so I had those conversations with my husband of, hey, who's coming up, right? Who's set to take that spot if it does, in fact, open up on the Republican side? And when he told me it was Brandon Herrera, I think my stomach just dropped. I have 4 children that I send to public school every single day. I work with people in the community, and then I realized that if he were to be the nominee and subsequently get elected, that he would also represent Uvalde, and that really, really hurt my heart.
All right, we're going to take a call now, and our phone lines are open. If you want to join the conversation, ask a question for Katie Padilla-Stout. Let's go to Kiefer Barton. He was also a candidate for the Republican nomination for the 23rd Congressional District. And Kiefer, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How you doing, sir?
Okay. You're on the air.
So, yes, sir. Hey, Ms. Stout, I just wanted to know, and I think I've asked you online this before, but in your role as an attorney ad litem, because you know that I am big on fixing the family court system, what was your recommendation percentage for mothers over fathers? And how often did you recommend that fathers get significantly less time than mothers?
So I think that's a great question, something that comes up in family law all the time. And I always let everybody know, hey, I'm not pro mom or pro kid or poor grandma or pro aunt, because I deal with a lot of foster care situations where it's not just mom and dad. That's my primary practice. I'm pro kid and whatever that looks like. And so there are plenty of cases where I've recommended that dad be primary. There are obviously other situations where we have mom. I think I'm most capable in a mediation settlement where we can go in there and try to find something that works for everyone. Right now, I have a case that we just got notice on that's going before the Supreme Court in regard to giving dad his rights back that had been terminated. So I hope that helps answer that question.
As you are campaigning and you're active right now, you're going out in West Texas working this massive district, what issue are you hearing most from voters?
You know, surprisingly, most voters across TX23, it's affordability, it's access to healthcare, and it's data centers. I mean, I cannot go anywhere without Texans being really concerned about data centers coming into their community, taking up their water supply, and being a nuisance to them. So while this is a really large district outside of Bexar County, number one issue is data centers.
We have a lot going into Medina County, which is also a high population in the district, one of your second largest population counties.
Correct. So Medina, we've met with twice, and both times the number one concern for those constituents are data centers.
Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, I applaud your running, but I'm wondering if your opposition won't be concerned about your lack of prior public service and maybe more commitment to teaching.
I don't understand your question. Say it again, Jennifer. Rephrase it.
In other words, no really depth of prior public service as a politician.
So
more education, you know.
Okay. All right. Jennifer, thank you for the question. And so, Katie.
So I'm actually the only candidate in the race prior to the primary other than Tony Gonzalez, who had served in a governmental board for almost 10 years. So I've been on the Bexar County Child Welfare Board, which is a political appointment. I am a trained lawyer that have been active in the community. And I think at this point, your options are either someone who's gone to law school, practiced for more than 10 years, a public school teacher, or a YouTuber. So I think I'm more qualified.
Right. How would you describe the district? You know, the district has a lot of needs. What do you see there?
As far as the needs, everybody kind of comes down to the same thing because everybody wants the same thing. They want safe, thriving communities for their families and for their children. Number one is affordability. We have got to help the middle class. We have one of the districts that suffers the most from poverty. We need that education infrastructure so that people can have social mobility to be able to excel in life. And so we really need to focus on those hometown kitchen table issues in this district.
And when you say people are talking about affordability, they see not upward mobility, but downward mobility? Is that happening?
They do. I think a lot of people are really worried that they're not going to be able to hang on through this economy, that the prices of chips at Walmart have gone from $12.99 to $15.99 to $17.99, and they're having to pack their children's lunch, and they're having to fill up their cars, and gas is at an all-time high.
You need a lot of gas to get around that district.
You know? You absolutely do.
And so the increasing in the gas prices, people are going to be feeling that and talking to you about that. And what do you tell them?
I tell them to hold on, that we have to have bipartisan support in Washington. We can't have one party calling all of the shots, doing whatever they want without any kind of congressional oversight. When we do, this is the kind of things that happen.
All right, we're taking a break here. I have Daniel. I'm going to get you on the board, on the air when we come back. And also, we want to hear from other voters, other listeners, people who want to know what's happening in this important election for the 23rd Congressional District. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. That's the number to call in to join the conversation. And The Source continues after this quick break.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A lot of national eyes are focused on what's happening in the 23rd Congressional District of Texas. This is a massive district. It stretches from San Antonio. It goes down to about Del Rio, and it switches over to, cuts through Medina County, over to El Paso, 800 miles of the Texas-Mexico border, a lot of area in there, the largest congressional district in Texas. We have the AK guy, Brandon Herrera. He is the Republican nominee. And for the Democrats, we have Katie Padilla-Stout. She is a political newcomer, first time for congressional politics. She's here to take your calls. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We were supposed to have Brandon Herrera on yesterday. He did not make it, and we do have an open invitation for him to come on anytime that he can find time for that. Let's go to Daniel on the phones. And Daniel, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking this call. Ms. Stout, it is S-T-O-U-T, Stout, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure I'm not messing up your name. First of all, I want to commend you for what you're doing. It takes a lot of courage and thinking, and I appreciate your intelligence on this point of guns. We don't need Texas to be the wild, wild west in 2026. And what happened in Uvalde and all across the country, and it's a growing problem, and bring some rationale and some intelligence to the state so that we just control this problem. And I'm really a little dismayed that Brandon Herrera, the things I've heard about his mockery of veterans and his position on AK and whatever, that we don't need that. We have too much of that. And that's all I wanted to say. I know many, many people that feel the same way. So thank you for what you're doing.
You're so welcome.
Daniel, thank you for the call. So this is a matchup between you and Brandon Herrera. He has made gun rights the center of his campaign. He has said that he wants to have a national open carry, constitutional carry law in place, which we already have in Texas. And we've seen how we've had a massive increase in gun violence in Texas since we've adopted that law. So where are you on gun safety?
Absolutely. So as a preface to that, Brandon Herrera has doubled down on the fact that he is a Second Amendment absolutist, which means that he is to the right of the NRA. So he is even more extreme than the NRA. He wants more freedoms for guns than the NRA. That includes domestic violence felons who have been convicted. He thinks that they should be able to get any kind of gun they want. That means children as young as 17 should be able to get whatever kind of guns they want. That means people that have just got out of prison should have whatever kinds they want. And I think Texans understand that that is not common sense. That doesn't make sense for the safety of anyone. We live in the land of the free. And that means freedom to send your kids to school, freedom to go to the grocery store, freedom to go to a movie theater without fear of being gunned down. I think there are very basic, common things that we can do to help to make our community safer. I went to school in the 90s under the Clinton administration when we actually had a national ban on assault rifles, and both parties in Congress allowed that to go into the sunset clause. And now I have to live in fear every day of sending my kids to school, worried that they're going to be the next victims of a school shooting. In my district, we have had two major tragedies. Number one is Uvalde, and number two was El Paso. This is something we have to do to ensure everyone's freedom. Don't want to take anybody's guns away. All I want to say is 18-year-olds with known mental health crisis should not have been able to buy two assault rifles at Academy with absolutely no second guess.
Do you want this election to be a referendum on guns? Because that's kind of what's turning it into.
No, absolutely not. I think that this district has a focus on affordability. I think we need to focus on healthcare, especially rural healthcare, because that's another concern we're hearing everywhere. And education, making sure that we have access to schools and public loan reform and universal pre-K. There are a lot of things that affect everyday Texans.
So this district has 800 miles of Texas-Mexico border. People typically look at members of Congress who are on the border as being people who can kind of help shepherd policies about the border. What would you want to do about the border?
So I'd want to defer to the people, like the five Republican sheriffs that are giving their input on what security should look like on the border. They highly oppose the border wall that this administration wants to build through our beautiful national park of Big Bend. I think that everyone understands that that's more of political theater than about keeping anyone safe. I think keeping the border safe and secure is a priority for anyone who's in office. But I think there are smarter ways we can do that. Those Republican sheriffs are telling us, hey, we need drones. We need something with eyes. Walls do not have eyes. They can't help us in enforcing this. They know the terrain. They know what's at stake. They know what to do. And so in that instance, we need to rely on our experts who are there, not outsiders.
Cook Political Report now says this is a likely Republican win. What do you say to that?
I say we're going to keep going in the right direction, which in my opinion is to the left.
And so what is polling telling us?
Polling's telling us that this is still a 14-point Trump district and only 2 points between Mr. Herrera and myself. So that is a huge discrepancy there.
So and the time between now and November, you have a lot of opportunity to talk to people.
I do.
And you think that's going to make the difference?
I absolutely do. I think the more people that get to know me and get to know my platform are going to come on board, especially our moderates and independents.
The National Democratic Party, are they going to come to your rescue, help you raise money? You need money for this. Brandon's raising money all over the place.
We absolutely do. Our fundraising has quadrupled, if not more, since Mr. Herrera has become the nominee. So we're looking forward to those next reports coming out for the FEC. The DCCC has been in communication with us as to whether or not they're going to actually give money is another question.
Katie Padilla-Stout, Democrat running for the 23rd Congressional District. Thank you.
Thank you.